this morning. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14. Text number 35. This chapter is entitled Pregnancy of Dhiti in the Evening. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Rudraya Mahate Deva Yograya Mithuse Shivaya Nyasta Dandhaya Rita Dandhaya Manyave Namaha. All obeisances unto Rudraya, unto the angry Lord Shiva, Mahate, unto the great, Devaya, unto the demigod, Ugraya, unto the ferocious, Midhuse, unto the fulfiller of all material desires, Shivaya, unto the all auspicious, Nyastadandaya, unto the forgiving. Drittadandaya, unto the immediate chastiser. Manyave, unto the angry. Translation, let me offer my obeisances unto the angry Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously very ferocious. who is simultaneously the very ferocious great demigod and the fulfiller of all material desires. He is all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. Please repeat. Let me offer my obeisances unto the angry Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously the very ferocious great demigod and the fulfiller of all material desires. He is all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. Purport by Srimad Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Dhiti prayed for the mercy of Lord Shiva very cleverly. She prayed, "The Lord can cause me to cry, but if He likes, He can also stop my crying, because He is Ashutosh. He is so great that if He likes, He can immediately destroy my pregnancy. But by His mercy, He can also fulfill my desire that my pregnancy not be spoiled. Because He is all auspicious, it is not difficult for him to excuse me from being punished, although He is now ready to punish me because I have moved His great anger. He appears like a man, but He is the Lord of all men." And the purport. Om Agyanantaranda Shagana Swataya Chakurna Namaum Vishnindaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutare Simhati Bhakti Vidanta Swamaneti Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Vacharine Nevishesha Shandavari Pasarisdharine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shivasri Gaur Bhakti Vinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Translation again, let me offer my obeisances unto the angry Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously the very ferocious great demigod and the fulfiller of all material desires. He is all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. Continuing the story of the pregnancy of Dhiti in the evening, the time was wrong for conception. It was early evening before the sun was setting at that time. And the husband Sapir warned, this is a wrong time. This is a time that Lord Shiva comes out with his followers, come out to play and look for suitable places at this time. Please wait for some time. Anyway, but she wouldn't wait. And now, after laying with her husband, then now she's feeling scared, feeling guilty. Now what will happen? We made a blunder here. I couldn't listen to the good words of my husband. Srila Prabhupada saying here she's offering prayers to Lord Shiva through her husband, because her husband's a great devotee of Lord Shiva. And here she is the nature of this prayer, she's offering her obeisances, she's glorifying Lord Shiva, who is simultaneously the great ferocious demigod, and he fulfills all material desires. He's all auspicious and forgiving, but his anger can immediately move him to chastise. So she's saying this, making a parallel there, this to the negative and the positive sides she's pointing out of Lord Shiva, just to remind him of his good side. And because he's in an angry mood, supposed to be in an angry mood at this moment because of transgressing the religious etiquette, so he's supposed to be in an angry mood. So therefore she's appealing to his other side, Ashutosh, Paritosh, his Ashutosh, that, and she being a helpless woman and approaching him in this way, pointing that she is obviously, she has made him angry, but he's also very auspicious, he's also very merciful. If he wants, you can destroy my embryo, or if you want, you can save that, I can keep my child, otherwise you can destroy it. I'm completely your mercy. But this is the etiquette, the proper behavior when we've offended somebody, or even when we haven't. If you want something, when you go to a superior like that in a offering prayers, glorifying their qualities sincerely, and putting yourself in a dependent position, I'm insignificant, I'm completely dependent on your mercy, life and death of my child is in your hands. You can make me or break me. This is the attitude in which she is displaying here. And so then if somebody approaches us in this mood, how would we feel? Immediately our anger would subside. Probably, if we were at all reasonable people, that they're pointing out your good qualities, and they are completely at your mercy, they become submissive. So this is these are very nice. That's everyone wants to be in that position in the material world, material consciousness, the Ishwara Bhava, the controller of everyone. So it's very nice if someone becomes very submissive to you. It's a very nice feeling. That's what we want. We want to be the center. We want to be the controller. So if someone is submissive, that means we're controlling them. And especially if they're emphasizing their submission, that they're completely dependent on us. Life and death is in your hands. That's supposed to be the greatest feeling, the greatest euphoria, that power of life and death is the greatest thing in this world, the greatest of four, better than anything else. That germinal thing, because that is God's position. He's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer ultimately. So we are dependent on the Lord at every moment. If he withdraws his one of his energies, air, then we'll only last a couple of minutes. So we're completely dependent. So many aspects, we are completely dependent. So that is the Lord. He is actually the controller. But in the material world, all the living entities are trying to imitate that controller. Especially those in the human form are trying to imitate his position. So when that means we should be greater than everyone else. So if someone presents themselves to us in a very submissive way, then naturally we'll feel good. The ego will feel good. Yes, this is nice. This is what I want. This is what I came to the material world for. So that being satisfied, then you'll be ready to bless them, right? He's a good person. This is a good person. They're submissive to me. They're good. I like that person because they're very submissive. They like me. They recognize my position. So then you're very likely to give them benediction or grant their wish. Is it not? I would. I'm a materialist. But this is actually the Vaishnava etiquette. We always, for our superiors, we always present ourselves as approach them humbly, right? With straw in the mouth. We want to inquire. We're coming to take something from them. We come in as beggars. We want to take some instruction. So we'll offer some service. How can I serve you? You have this quality, that quality. You're so learned. You're my superior. I'm in ignorance. You can remove my ignorance. If I can serve you, then I can get the mercy of Radharani and all things like that. Right? But that actually is true if the devotee is of that caliber. So this is actually the etiquette that we're taught. This is how to approach somebody. Then naturally that will invoke their compassion. If someone comes into you in distress or in an inferior, the Vaishnava etiquette is to show mercy, right, to the lesser. You worship, serve the superiors, inquiry, make friendship with the equals, and you show compassion to the lesser, those are under you, lesser than you in whatever particular aspect. So everyone fits into, everyone has people above them and people under them and equals. So we're all in that same position. We all have those three relationships going on. So we can use this. We can use these examples, and this is how we're supposed to behave. This is the etiquette. So this is what the Srimad Bhagavatam is bringing out. This is the way the great people act, the greatest people act, and so we can follow in their example. Of course, the bad example is it starts with a bad example that they didn't follow the Vedic etiquette. They produced a child at the wrong time. It wasn't the time for producing children. There's specific times, and that time wasn't the right time. So then there's going to be a reaction. So she's fearful. So she's okay. you can do whatever you like. The child in my womb is in your hands. You're easily punished. You're easily angered, but you're easily pleased. You have both those qualities. Now, what will Lord Shiva do? So now you're in a spot. You see, if someone's spoken to you like that, you can't really continue your anger at them. If they presented themselves as very insignificant, very sorry, very remorseful, and you know, begging forgiveness. So at the same time you're glorified. They're being glorified, and at the same time they're putting themselves recognizing their fault and leaving the judgment completely up to you. What will you do? So naturally you're going to show compassion if you're, of course, he's a sage. For the Kshatriyas it may be different, because the Kshatriyas have to follow the rules. The Prabhupada said a Brahmani, he'll always forgive. He said a Kshatriya must follow an eye for an eye kind of thing. But for a Brahmana, he will always forgive, because a Brahmana, that's one of the qualities of a Brahmana: forgiveness, tolerance. So that all these different examples, all these different moral, religious, and spiritual examples we're taking from this story. That's why they're there. That's why the Bhagavatam is there. So it's compiled specifically for this reason, to bring us in line, to make us, you know, ethically right and morally right, and spiritually in the right direction. It is the purpose of the scriptures, especially the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it's directly bringing one to the spiritual platform. So although here it says Lord Shiva is like an ordinary, she says you're like an ordinary man. This is the purport from somebody, Srila Prabhupada is mentioning. He appears like a man, but he is the Lord of all men. Because Lord Shiva, because of his contrary nature, he would appear, you know, he's quite a personality, you know. He's very peaceful, or he can be very angry. In fact, by his anger, when he becomes angry, infuriated, then he can perform his dance, the dance of destruction, when it says time, when that's the time. But such a great personality, we shouldn't, that's just the way he acts. We shouldn't think that they're have to force to act like we are forced to act, because Lord Shiva is beyond all that. He is a Mahajan. Mahajans, they're the authorities that we follow, the 12 Mahajans. So he's setting the example. But we can't imitate. So many people try to imitate Lord Shiva, but of course they cannot. Lord Shiva, in fact, he is the control. He is the master of all men here. And he is the factual enjoyer in the spirit, in the material world. That's it. In his position, there's no fault. He can enjoy it he can sport with the material energy however he likes, and there's no fault on his part, because he actually is the enjoyer. When we try to enjoy Parvati or the material energy, then that's a fault on our part. That's irreligious. But when he does it, it's religious. But even if he acts in an irreligious way, which he doesn't, Lord Shiva, there's no harm, there's no effect on him, because he's such a great personality. He doesn't have to atone, because the sins, there won't be any reaction for him. He's such a great personality. I'd like to read why Lord Shiva appears like he does. This is from Krishna Katamrita, Gopal Jewel production. It's adapted from the, I don't know who wrote it. It's adapted from the Padma Purana. Nice song. Not so much to do with the purport, but we've heard this same theme for many, many purports. So. The Parvati said, "O Lord, you once told me that one should avoid speaking with prasandis, that means atheists, offenders, atheistic demons, and that doing so is worse than talking to chandlers or outcasts. Please tell me of what are the symptoms of such persons, and what signs do they wear in their bodies?" Shiva replied, "Those persons who are deluded by ignorance describe any other deity as being superior to Vishnu, the Lord of the world. They are said to be prasandis. Those who, although they do not belong to the Vanaprastha ashram, use skulls, decorate their bodies with ashes and bones, have non-Vedic marks, matted hair, and wear garments of tree bark are said to be prasandis." That means only for the vanaprasths. Those special vanaprasths. Those Brahmins who are devoid of marks of symbols dear to Vishnu, such as conscious disc and vertical line tilak worn on the forehead, are said to be pasandis. They're heavy, eh? The Brahmana who does not follow the practices given in the Shastras should be known as a pasandi and should be condemned by all people. Those who have no devotion to the Lord are said to be pasandis. One who behaves as he likes and offers oblations into the fire for the worship of deities other than Lord Vishnu should be known as a pashandi. For Lord Vishnu is the enjoyer of the fruits of all sacrifices and is the deity of the Brahmanas. He who considers Lord Vishnu as equal to other deities such as Brahma and myself, Rudra, should always be called a pashandi. That Brahmana who with his speech, body and deeds does not recognize Vishnu is a pasandi. What is the use of saying so much in this regard? Those Brahmanas who are not devotees of Vishnu should never be asked any questions, should never be talked to, and should never be seen. Lord Shiva Mahajan. Parvati said, O Lord, in other words, if someone is not a devotee, how can they help you? If someone's not a devotee of Vishnu, how can they help you in the material world? Because only Vishnu can release one from the material world. Nobody else. So if he's saying it's a waste of time going to these other people, shouldn't waste your time. Very direct. Shiva has a Mahajan. Parvati said, O best of the gods, I want to ask you something secret. Through love for me, please answer. I have a great doubt. The Shastras condemn using skulls, decorating the body with ashes and wearing skins of animals, yet you do all these things. Why are these things condemned? O Lord of the gods, O highly intelligent one, due to women's natural fickleness, I am asking you these questions. It may be that due to your great power, you don't have to follow the Shastric injunctions you just described. But you don't have to follow the Shastric injunctions you just described. But previously you had instructed me in this way. Therefore, O Lord, please pardon my question. He's telling her one thing and he's doing another. He's given the Vedic instructions. But he's transgressing them. So she has a doubt. But look how she's presented it very nicely, very sweetly, very flattering. And out of love, she says, so please... This is my question. So even husband and wife, even though you're very intimate, you can still use these nice. don't think that as soon as you're married, your partner's your property, and you can speak and treat how you like. You see, there's even the culture goes on from there. Inquired thus by Parvati in that lonely place, free from people, Lord Shiva explained to her the great secrets of his own behavior. Lord Shiva said, O goddess, please listen carefully. I should tell you a very wonderful secret. You should not repeat what I'm about to tell you to common people. I shall tell you this since your body is not separate from mine. Long ago in the age of Swayambhu Manu, there were many great demons like Namuchi, who's mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, who were very powerful and valorous heroes. All of them were devoted to Vishnu, acted purely, and were free from all sins. They followed the practices laid down in the Vedas. Seeing this, all the gods headed by Indra were greatly frustrated. Overcome by fear, they approached Lord Vishnu and took shelter of him. The Deva said, O Kesava, only you can conquer these great demons who cannot be conquered by all the gods and are washed off their sins with penance. I don't know if it's the same story where the demigods, they worship Vishnu so nicely, followed all of the performed austerities to get rid of their previous sins, worship Vishnu better than the demigods who had just offended their guru Brihaspati. So now he thought, now is the time to get the demigods. You worship Vishnu better than they do. So they began to worship Vishnu very nicely. Then they conquered the demigods. Then the demigods went to Vishnu. He said, I can't do anything. what can I do? He said, they're worse with me better than you. I've got to reciprocate with him. So in this way, this story is the same story as that one. Lord Shiva continued, hearing the frightful words of the demigods, Lord Vishnu, Purushottam, consoled the devas, and he said to me, O Rudra, you of mighty arms, O you who are the best of the gods, for the purpose of deluding the enemies of the demigods, prepare a course of conduct to be followed by Prasandis. Narrate to them the dark Puranas, which will take them astray. Puranas 6, 6 in the mode of ignorance, 6 in the mode of passion, 6 in the mode of goodness. Bhagavad Prana is mode of goodness. This other 6 for those in the mode of ignorance, 6 Puranas. So he's saying, go and preach these Puranas to the demons to lead them astray. O intelligent one, you should create holy texts that would cause the demons to become confused. Through devotion to me and for the good of the world, you should approach atheistic sages such as Kanada, Gautam, Sakti, Upamanyu, Jaimini, Kapila, not the son of Devahuti, the atheistic Kapila, Aradurvasa, Mrikandu, Brihaspati, he's the guru of the demons. Who's the guru of the demigods? Huh? Brihaspati? Yeah. Brihaspati, Bhargava, and Jamanagni, which were presenting the 6 philosophers coming from some of these, like Jaimini and Kanada, the atheistic philosophies, which are deviant from the, not actually Vedic philosophies. Exert upon them your power of suggestion. By being infused by your power, they will become powerful Prasandis. There is no doubt about it. Empowered by you, these Brahmanas will narrate to the 3 worlds the Puranas and doctrines in the mode of ignorance. O Shiva, on your person you should bear symbols like a skull, animal skins, ashes and bones. Dressed in this way, you should fully delude everyone in the 3 worlds. You should also inaugurate Pushupata. The Pushupatas are a group of followers of Lord Shiva. With its divisions like Gankala Shaiva, Prashanda and Mahashaiva. Through these persons you should preach a doctrine whose followers wear no particular identifying marks and are outside of the Vedic fold. Wearing ashes and bones, they will be bereft of higher consciousness and will consider you to be the greatest god. Taking to these doctrines, all these demons will become averse to me in a moment. There is no doubt about it. O powerful Rudra, in every age, in my different incarnations, I too shall worship you to delude the demons. Following these doctrines, they will undoubtedly fall down. There is a reason why people say, well, Lord, sometimes Vishnu worships Lord Shiva. How can you say Vishnu is supreme? You see him worshipping Lord Shiva. But here he says, I too, in my different incarnations, I too shall worship you to delude the demons. So I'm worshipping. Then Vishnu's worshipping Shiva. He must be more powerful. Then let's go and worship Lord Shiva. So this is a cosmic plan, the long-term plan of Vishnu to delude the demons, so that they stop worshipping him, and then they'll lose their actual potency, real potency. They may become some material potency. So I too shall worship you. Following these doctrines, they will undoubtedly fall down. Lord Shiva then told Parvati, O beautiful one, after hearing Vishnu's words, although I am a good speaker, I became helpless and silent. Then offering my obeisances to Lord Vishnu, I said, O Lord, if I do what you have said, it will certainly lead to my destruction. It is not possible for me to carry out this instruction, yet your order is not to be disobeyed. This is very painful. O Goddess, hearing my words, Vishnu spoke in such a way to restore my happiness. He said, this will not be the cause of your destruction. Do as I order you for the good of the demigods. I shall also give you means to maintain yourself while you're preaching these demoniac philosophies. Then, with compassion, Lord Vishnu gave me the prayers known as Vishnu Sahasranam. Vishnu said, "Install in me in your heart, utter my indestructible mantra. This very powerful six-syllable mantra is transcendental and awards liberation to those who worship me with devotion. There is no doubt about this." This is the mantra. "I offer my obeisances to him, dark like the petal of a blue lotus, with lotus petal eyes, holding a conch, a disc, and the sangha bow, adorned with all ornaments, wearing yellow garments, having four arms, and who is the dear lord of Janaki, Sita Devi. The topmost mantra, Sri Ramaya Namaha, should be chanted. It removes all lamentation and gives salvation even to sinners. One who regularly chants this mantra will be freed from all contaminations. All of the sinful reactions due to wearing ashes and bones will all be destroyed, and everything will become auspicious due to reciting my mantra. O best of the gods, being pleased, I shall destroy all sin. By my blessings, devotion to no other god than me will arise in your heart. Worship me, who is the supreme being. Obey my order. Due to love for me, everything will be auspicious for you." Having thus ordered me, O goddess, he dismissed the host of gods, who then returned to their own abodes. The gods, led by Indra, then requested me, "O Mahadev Shiva, quickly perform these beneficial acts as instructed by Lord Vishnu." Mahadev then said to the goddess Parvati, "Oh, auspicious one, for the good of the gods, I took to the way of the Pashandis and started wearing skulls, hides, ashes, and bones. Oh, auspicious one, as instructed by Vishnu, I distributed the Tamastic Puranas and the Pashandi Shiva doctrines. Oh, sinless one, by entering Gautama and other Brahmanas with my potency, I proclaimed texts outside the Vedic fold. Adopting the system I gave, all of the wicked demons became averse to Lord Vishnu and were enveloped in ignorance. Applying ashes to their severe penances, they stopped worship of Vishnu and worshipped only me with flesh, blood, and sandalwood. Receiving boons from me, they became very intoxicated with power and pride. They were very much attached to the objects of the senses and were full of lust and anger. In that condition, devoid of goodness, they were defeated by the devas. Bereft of righteous paths, those who resort to this doctrine of mine always go to hell." Oh, don't tell this to the Shiva bhaktas. "Receiving boons from me, they became intoxicated with power and pride." Sorry. "O goddess, this behavior of mine is only followed by me for the good of the gods. Following Vishnu's order, I decorate myself with ashes and bones. O goddess, these external marks are meant only for deluding the demons. In my heart, I always meditate on the Supreme Lord Vishnu and always chant his mantra. By chanting this great six-syllable mantra, we always taste the eternal nectar of ecstatic joy. O lady with an auspicious face, I have answered you all that you have asked me affectionately. Affectionately, I ask you, what else do you desire to hear?" Parvati said, "O sinless one, tell me about the Tamastic scriptures that were composed by the Brahmanas bereft of devotion to the Lord. O Lord of the demigods, please tell me their names in sequence." Lord Shiva replied, "O goddess, please listen in sequence. I shall tell you about the Tamastic texts. Simply by remembering them, even a wise person becomes deluded. First, I myself proclaimed the Shaiva Pashupata and related texts. After my power had entered him, Kanada preached the Vaisheshika philosophy. Similar, Gautama preached Naya, and Kapila preached atheistic Sankhya. Brihaspati preached the much censured Charvaka doctrine, and Vishnu, in the form of Buddha, proclaimed the false teachings of Buddhism to destroy the demons. Mayavada philosophy is an impious, wicked belief. It has covered Buddhism. My dear Parvati, in Kali Yuga, I assume the form of a Brahmana and teach this imagined philosophy." Another text. "This Mayavada philosophy deprives the worlds of the holy text of the actual meaning, and thus is condemned in the world. It recommends the renunciation of one's duties, since those who have fallen from their duties say that giving up duties is religiosity. I also have propounded the identity of the Supreme Lord and the individual soul. In order to bewilder the atheist in Kali Yuga, I describe the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be without form and qualities. Similarly, in explaining Vedanta, I describe the same Mayavad philosophy in order to mislead the entire population towards atheism by denying the personal form of the Lord. While speaking, as described in the 7th chapter of Adi Leela of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, while speaking to Prakashananda Saraswati and the Mayavadi sannyasis of Benares, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu cited these texts to show how Lord Shiva had come in Kali Yuga as Sripad Sankaracharya to propound the philosophy of monism, cited translations of texts 7, 10, and 11 are based on the translations of his Vaigas A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, as found in his purports. Yamadevaki Jai. Here we see now some of the reasons why Lord Shiva acts in such a way, so to create followers, get power, how they can easily get power. This is actually what we want in a material world. Everyone wants to execute this Ishvara Bhava, and by worshipping Lord Shiva he's very easily pleased, so he gives these boons to them. so all these atheistic or non-Vedic philosophies which were induced by Shiva in the form of Shankaracharya, Adi Shankaracharya, was just to, as we know from the Srimad Bhagavatam, to lead the people away from Buddhism, mainly. The original one was to protect the demigods. That was in Swayambhu Manu's reign. That was up in Satyuga. So again he appears as incarnate as Shankaracharya and preaches all these philosophies, which are still very popular today. Then, as we know, at least he brought them back to the Shankaracharya. he brought them back to the. Wait a minute. How he was teaching impersonalism. But Shankaracharya's business was to bring them back to the Vedas, right? So I guess it was Lord Shiva for the induced those other philosophers to make their own philosophies or deviant from the Vedic philosophies. And Buddha appeared because the purpose was done of deluding putting the demigods back in control, but meanwhile these atheistic philosophies were still rampant, and they were using these philosophies. I'm getting lost. But anyway, ultimately Shankaracharya, he came after Lord Buddha to bring them back to the because Buddha said forget the Vedas, because at that time they was using the injunction of the Veda for animal sacrifice where it's permitted, and so that the animal sacrifice was rampant. Many people started to kill animals just for the sake of eating, and they said, no, it's Vedic, you can kill animals. But then Lord Buddha said, forget the Vedas, listen to me, follow me. So then he took them away that time. He brought them back to the Vedas, and then after him came the other Vaishnava stalwarts like Ramanuja and Madhava to bring he brought them back to the Shankaracharya brought them back to the Vedas, but preached an impersonal conception of the Lord. he portrayed the Brahman aspect of as being the absolute truth, as being supreme. Then the Vaishnavas came and pointed out that the Brahman is the Brahman, Brahma Jyoti is just the reflection of the Lord, the Jyoti of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So they brought the personality of Godhead back into the picture, and then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu synthesized it with his philosophies of Achintaveda Veda Tattva. So unless we hear, see the whole a bigger picture, then it's very bewildering, because you know these things go on for hundreds and hundreds of years, a span. Different philosophies are introduced. The Lord incarnates. The Lord Himself is teaching an atheistic philosophy for many, many generations. So it's kind of bewildering why He does it, because we see everything only in a few lifetimes. But from the viewpoint of eternity, it's from one breath of Mahavishnu, it's very, very short period, and it takes that long. It must take that long to do it. It must take that long to exact a change. He says it takes about 2,000 years, because we can't go back so far in history, but the modern historians say it takes about 3,000 years for a religion to become a mythology. So it takes, this is the time it takes. But anyway, we shouldn't think that these are real stories. They actually happen. They're real people, Lord Shiva. So we shouldn't think he's like an ordinary person, or they're just made up stories. So of course, it's all conducted by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If this episode wasn't here, if this hadn't have happened, then how would Hiranyakashipu been born? And if they weren't born, how would the Lord have filled his desire of having a fight? How would all these wonderful leelas been narrated for us, and all the instructions that are contained within be narrated? So this is, from Lord's point, it's all pastime. But their actual, the factual things, the actual pastimes took place. And they're all extraordinary people. Lord Shiva's incarnation, he's a guna avatar of the Lord, so he's an extraordinary person, although he he behaves somewhat extraordinary, or sometimes super ordinary. We shouldn't think he's an ordinary person. Lord Shiva's easily pleased. He's easily angered, but he has no need to be angry. Why should Lord Shiva become angry? he is the controller in the material world. Why should he become angry? Nothing can interfere with his will. We become angry when we don't get what we want. But the Lord Shiva gets whatever he wants, because Durga is completely submissive to him. She can produce, she can give him whatever he wants. And she's the material energy. So for the great souls, there's no duty to perform. So he can be, whether he can be angry or he can be, it's all the same to him. So this is just the way, for their pastimes, he has this character. But even the great souls, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, even the conditioned souls, not the avatars, even the conditioned souls have the perfect souls, they have these qualities also. For a self-realized soul, there is no duty to perform. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, nor is there any need not to perform that duty. So they can perform the duty or not perform the duty. They're unaffected. Generally, they perform the duty, so the common people will follow. But these great personalities, these liberated personalities, they shouldn't be, they're not in the same category, and they don't have to go through the same reactions that that we will have to go through, because we're not great personalities. So the idea is we follow them, but we don't imitate them. We don't try to imitate them, because we don't have their potency. So they become our heroes. We follow their instructions. Srila Prabhupada said, instructions are to follow, not to judge others by. So we follow them, especially Lord Shiva, he's a Mahajan. But we're not going to follow. We're hearing from the Srimad Bhagavatam, so we're not going to follow all those other shastras, those tamastic shastras that Lord Shiva wrote. So we're not that. We don't follow that aspect of Lord Shiva, Rudra, who's appearing to bewilder the demons. We worship Shambhu, or the Lord, who's always his Shadow Shiva. He's always meditating on the pastimes of the Lord. That's one aspect of Lord Shiva. Then his other aspects, he appears in a materialistic way. But in any case, for us, he's always worshipable, even though we don't follow those instructions, which are not meant for us. They're meant for other people. But for us, he's always worshipable, even if he's teaching atheistic philosophies. He's still a great devotee. He's teaching it. He's teaching atheism under the direction of the Lord. Therefore, he is always beyond any fault. Jai Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Adai Gopramandi, Hari Om, Hare Krishna. Any comment or question? Jai. Vishnu doesn't like to be asked for material benefits. Not really. He sends them to Shiva. And we can ask. Akama savakama va moksha kara kama udhara de. Whether you are full of material desires, worship Lord Vishnu. Whether you have no desires, you want liberation, or you are full of material desires, go to Vishnu. So not Shiva. So he's our Ishtadeva is Vishnu. Shiva is not our Ishtadeva, but we worship him as the greatest Vaishnava, because he's doing that huge job for the Lord. But the path he's given is to bewilder the atheists. But when they become unbewildered, then they'll worship Vishnu. So we don't worship Lord Shiva like that for benedictions, because whatever he gets, he's empowered by Vishnu. Whatever he can give, he's only can do it because of Vishnu. So what can't Vishnu give? He can give all and more than Lord Shiva. So Krishna's our Ishtadeva. We worship him. Although he doesn't like, but sometimes he does. Krishna says even in my material, sometimes he likes to give his devotees what he. But that's a little higher platform. But he doesn't mind. He says because he says when I think it's Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. I think it's that shloka where I maintain what they have, I carry what they lack. Some people think that why should Krishna carry what you lack? You're making him your beast of burden, your older supplier. But he said, no, Krishna says, I do this. I voluntarily do this. To my devotees, I voluntarily do this. I come and help them, give them these things. I like to do it. So, they're all demigods or devotees. They worship Lord Vishnu. They always worship Lord Vishnu. But they maintain their position of being demigods, of being controllers. They like that position. They don't want to lose that position. Whereas the unalloyed devotee is whatever you want, Krishna, happiness or distress. However you want me to serve, I serve like that. But these demigods are not unconditional. They like that position of power. So they're little gods, they're big controllers as far as we're concerned. So they have a huge responsibility, huge power, and they enjoy that. They enjoy serving Krishna like that. So this is considered more in the mode of passion. But they're not, that they like, they actually want that. They're not interested, so much interested in going back to Vaikuntha. Not so much. Because when Vichasura was fighting with Indra, the other way around, Vichasura said, "You're such a fool." He said, "You approached Lord Vishnu," and he says, What can I do? He said, "Give me a weapon to kill this demon." He said, "You could have asked him to take you back to Godhead." He said, "You're such a jerk." Instead, you've got to now pick it up and fight. And made him embarrassed because he knocked the weapon out of his hand. That's Shakti. "Now pick it up and fight." He said, Vishnu's given that. He's given you order. He said, "You can't lose. Don't lose heart." So he was like an unalloyed pure devotee. He said, "He's ready to die. Yeah, I have to. Vishnu's given you that. What can I do about it?" Okay, I said, "No, my." But anyway, so he was a devotee in a demoniac body. And Indra, he put Indra to shame because Indra was a big demigod, a devotee, but he was acting very materialistically. He said, "You're such a fool. Vishnu's asking you for a benediction and you ask for some material weapon. Why didn't you say, go back to Godhead? Get out of this place." Then he put to shame. But still, he kept his position as Indra. Keep the goal of going back to Godhead when you're disturbed by material things. No, that's your overall goal, is to go back to Godhead. Meanwhile, you've got all these other things to deal with that don't go away. But your overall goal is to go back to Godhead. Therefore, you accept the spiritual master. therefore, you make those vows. You'll follow these vows, and he'll take you go back to Godhead. But in the meantime, you've got to deal with all these other material things, attachments. But they're more or less superficial, because above all your subtle body has become spiritualized. This, you know what the goal is, and this is what you actually want. But you've got these other things you don't really want, but you can't say no. You know, by intelligence they're not good, but by emotions, by the mind, they're nice. You can't say no to them. So this is just these will gradually go away. So they're kind of superficial. But you should desire to go back to God. Who? He understood. They all know. They all know that in the Lord's abode, they all know about Vaikuntha. So it's the same as us. They're just on a different dimension. They're more situated in the mode of goodness on this higher dimension than we are, in the 14 planetary systems, but they're doing exactly the same as we are, controlling and enjoying. They're devotees of the Lord, and because of their pious activities, they got that facility to execute that, fulfill that Ishwara Bhava more than we have. That's all. So they know, just like us, we know the best thing to do is go back to Godhead, become a pure devotee, just surrender to Krishna and give up all material, but we can't do it. We know what to do, but doing it's another thing, isn't it? So same with the demigods. They're just on a different dimension, different platform. It's the same thing. They're conditioned living entities like us. Sorry? what? They are chastised. I didn't understand the question. Yeah, yeah. That's what all these stories are for. All the stories are mainly someone's having a problem, right? Most of the stories are. They have a problem, but they're ordinary people. They're emperors, they're demigods, or they're big demons. They're some powerful person, not ordinary person. And generally they're not pure devotees, because it's not very exciting. Pure devotees just chant Hare Krishna and go back to God. So therefore we want this stuff to get the adrenaline running. Oh, this is interesting. Here's romance, here's adventure, here's your sex, here's your adventure, here's your wars, or your intrigue, your politics, that's what we like. So that's, it's given in this format. But all the end of the story is they all get frustrated, and then Narada Muni or someone comes along and enlightens them, and then they give it all up and go back to Godhead, or become really powerful, and then Vishnu comes and kills them, so it's the same thing there, just in this way and that way. You're telling so many examples of different histories, but it's all the same. They all lead to the same thing. They're saying the same thing. People who try to become successful materially. All the same stories, but nobody does it. And if they do, then Vishnu comes and kills them. If they do become to the top, like Hiranyakashipu, isn't it? But otherwise, they don't get that far. But they become an emperor, or they become a demigod. So it puts us in our position. We're worried about a new house, or the latest car, or the latest. That's what we're thinking about. these are talking about people who have empires. 50 wives. These are the kind of stories there. So we can. What do we want? It's nothing. Peanuts. Look what they got, and they weren't satisfied. Whatever they got, they weren't satisfied, and they couldn't keep it. So that's why the big examples are put there.